Hi, everybody. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air.
Freedom. This is what I call freedom.
Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio, folks. It's a great day in the city of Chicago. Thank you very much. I know you're out there. And it's just a great day, another great day. We had some storms and some rain and some thunder last night. Yeah, but it was all good. I think we needed it. You know, I actually think we needed that that rain. But I'm pretty sure a lot of people out downstate Illinois who are flooding out, they didn't need it probably. But I think Chicagoans needed it, you know. And after the rain, you know, after the rain, wow, that sounds like a book or a story, after the rain. Okay, but after the rain, sun came out and shot up to the 90s almost. And it's a great day in the city of Chicago, weather-wise, and I hope it's a great day wherever you are. And I hope nobody's out there feeling depressed and lonely and out of it and worthless, you know, because the George Wilder Jr. Show is not about that. You cannot feel worthless and depressed and down because things are not going right. You've got to get up and move. You've got to, well, if you can't, you know, at least do so inside of your head, your mind, if I can say that. All right, you can always follow this show on Blog Talk Radio right here. Follow, just click like or whatever. And Facebook, and I'm all over the place, Twitter, Instagram. I haven't used my Instagram. I haven't posted anything on Instagram for a long time. I don't know what happened. I barely go and see it, you know. There was a time I used to always, first thing I used to do is check my Instagram account, my Instagram page. But now I just let it sit there and it lingers. And I guess I didn't really care that much for it because only thing you did was post photographs, you know. And everybody was posting photographs. Some were good, some were awful. But at least they got the world to see whatever they were posting in a photograph format, you know. So who knows? But Twitter is like, you know, it's just like automatic. As soon as you turn on your computer or your phone, that's the first place people go to is Facebook. I mean, you see 1,000 people when you're going down the street. You see 1,000 people standing straight up with their faces down into their phones. You can almost surmise, you know, you can be spot on that every one of those folks with their faces down into their phones, not paying attention to where they're going, not paying attention to what to their surroundings, they are on Facebook. It's Facebook, Facebook, and then some more Facebook. That's all it's about. Because as I was saying before, people have their phones. I mean, there are still people actually driving around texting and on their phone when they know it's against the law. They will be pulled over and locked up. You know, but people are going to do what they're going to do. You know, people are going to talk on the phone. They don't give a damn. They don't care. I guess they have enough money to bail themselves out or you know, pay that ticket or whatever. But, you know, there's strict law. I think it's all over America, in every state in America. I mean, talking on your cell phone, texting is against the law. But people, they will still do it. I see them all the time, folks. I mean, you know, I wouldn't do that. You know, I wouldn't do that. If I needed to talk on the phone and I was driving and I'm driving, I would pull over to the side of the road and then make my call. I've always done that. But other people, they are on their phone and they don't care what you think. They don't care if you see them. They don't care. They're just talking and texting their asses off, you know, so they're just blatantly just not following the law, you know. But I would probably tell people, put the phones down when you're driving, because a lot of times when people are texting and driving, they blow a stop sign. They blow a red light. You know, you can't, if you're trying to cross the street, you can't get across the street because everybody's running the light because everybody's on the cell phone. They're not paying attention to where they're going and to what's in front of them. And it has happened. People have died in collisions and just trying to cross the street because the motorist, the driver, was on a cell phone, texting, talking, you know, taking pictures. You ever seen a driver driving in his or her car? They're driving and they have a dog in their lap or they're eating. I see it all the time. Not all the time, but some of the times. And just like I see people texting, I think I see people texting and using their cell phones while driving than anything else. But every now and then you'll see someone with their dog in their lap. The dog is, you know, hanging, his head is out of the window while the driver is driving. I mean, when I see that, I make sure that I stay way away from that person who's driving with a dog in their lap. And then you see people putting on makeup while driving. Yeah, eyebrow pencil and lipstick, whatever. And mostly women, okay, putting on makeup. And I'm saying, wow, in the car while you're driving? And then you see people eating. I've seen people, you know, chugging down on a Big Mac or a Whopper with fries, driving. So if you're trying to cross the street, folks, be careful, because a lot of these people, they don't want to stop for you. I mean, some people don't want to stop for you, even if you have the right of way. Some people just don't want to give you the right of way. You know, they're late for work, or they're trying to get someplace in a hurry and they need to be there. Time is running out. So, you know, so if you're trying to cross the street and they're in a hurry or they're going to be late for work, you better get out of the way, because stop sign or red light or whatever, they are going to go right through those signals and could hit you. So people should slow down. People should stop using their cell phones while driving. Do not drive with a dog in your lap. Do not drive while using makeup. And please don't eat and drive. You know, all of these are distractions. All of these can get you killed or somebody else killed, or everybody dies. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. It is 6:12. Straight up Chicago time, folks, and it feels good out here. It feels great. It's wonderful. And I hope, like I said before, I hope that it's okay where you are, because if it is, then we're all having a great time. We're all having it's a good thing that we are alive today. Thank God that you are alive, that you woke up this morning, and that you don't have too many troubles, as other people have lots of troubles, all kinds of troubles. And just thank your lucky stars for that. I mean, you have to thank your lucky stars for that. And like I said before, don't be depressed. Don't be down. Do not ever feel worthless. You're not worthless. None of us are worthless. We may not have a lot of things that other people have, you know. We just have to deal with what we have. What we do have and what we can control. And that's another thing. Don't worry about things you cannot control. You know, it doesn't make sense. Something happening in the world, only thing you can do is pray and that things become normal again, and go on and do whatever you have to do. But do not feel down, depressed, as if you're worthless or you're useless. That's not going to get it. Okay. That's not going to get it all. All right. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I think I'm talking too fast. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. That sounds better. That sounds a lot better.
My son has been arrested for walking while black.
A lot of sons have been arrested.
Yeah, I get it. It doesn't make me, you know, you can't buy your way out of this one. You can't educate your way out of it.
It's happening too much, or at least we know about it now.
It's always happened. We see more evidence of it. And too often people still are inclined to say, well, if he'd had a different attitude, well, if he hadn't been driving, well, if he hadn't been this, if he hadn't been that, almost as if the victim is partially to blame. You know, in the case of Garner, well, he shouldn't have resisted. In the case of Brown, well, where was he? In the case of Trayvon, well, he had a hood on, you know, and in the case of whoever, you know, in case of Sandra Bland, you know, well, her attitude was bad. It's like, no, stop. Stop. This has nothing to do with the victims. This has everything to do with the culture of demeaning a person of color. And there is no justification for society where my son has a far greater chance of being stopped, held, killed than your son, simply because he's black.
All right, I want to give a shout out to my guest yesterday, Dewey Reynolds. I told him that I will send him a link to that show, and I haven't done it so far. Been really busy, so I'm going to try to get it out today once this show is over. However, there is a crime spike in the city of Chicago. I mean, there is no doubt about it. Crime has gone up. I mean, anytime there's warmth outside and it's great outside, crime in some neighborhoods just spike. I mean, sometimes I actually hate to turn on the news because, you know, it just sounds so awful and so bad. Two little girls were shot a day or so ago, and it's just hardening. They're gonna live, but it's just hardening that crime is, people are shooting up each other again. Summer brings out the thugs, the gangsters, the gangbangers, and there's no matter how many times or how much police officers take these guys off the street, they take guns off the street, gangsters and mafia types off the streets, you know, there is going to be others to take the places, to take their places. It's just a sad thing. It's just a sad reality in some cases of summer. Yeah, in some cases of summer, this is especially in the city of Chicago. And especially south and west sides of the city, the deep poverty areas of the city, where people are saying that, well, what they need is jobs and resources. What they need is a big kick up in the ass and jail time for shooting innocent people. That's what they need, you know. So yeah, summertime in the city of Chicago means a spike in crime. And I don't understand, what is the police doing? You know, I mean, they are supposed to have all of these tools in their belt that are supposed to help out. They even have the federal government. They even have the FBI here. And crime is still, it seems, out of control. But it's just awful, folks. It's just an awful thing.
It was first reported by the New York Times. The president said this, and I'm quoting Comey in the memo. Comey says the president said, "I hope you can see your way clear to letting this go, to letting Flynn go."
When I first saw the tweet this morning, I was frankly disgusted. I thought to myself, this dude has got such a fixation with women and blood. What is wrong with him? And then you remember that this dude, this disgusting dude, is the president of the United States. And you realize just how much he is diminishing the presidency of the United States. You realize that what he is doing is not just acting for Donald Trump. He's acting for all of us. He's acting for our president. And he is embarrassing. He is shameful. He is disgusting. And I'll say this about Republicans. I'm really tired of hearing words like disappointed, like disturbed, like I'm bothered, like I wish he wouldn't do it. It's time that somebody looks at the camera and looks at him and calls him up and says, listen, you crazy lunatic 70-year-old man, baby, stop it. You are now the president of the United States, the commander in chief, and you need to stop acting like a mean girl, because we just won't take it. We won't vote with you. We won't work with you. I can't start talking about tax reform. I can't start talking about healthcare reform, because I can't get past the fact that we have a president who lacks the sufficient character. We have a president who is mean. We have a president who is nasty. We have a president who is immature, unstable, and just acts like a crazy person with anybody who attacks him because he's got thin skin and he is never going to pivot. And anybody around him, whether it's his daughter, his chief of staff, his wife, who I remind you had said her signature issue was going to be fighting against online bullying, or any Republican on the Hill, stop enabling him. Confront this and confront this hard, or it will never stop, and it will embarrass all of us. It will take the presidency low, low, low.
I suspect the president is not going to accept your advice, but what do you believe he needs to do to fix this?
Stop. Look, if you can't control your tweeting habits, then stop tweeting. Go seek therapy. Go knit. Find a hobby. Talk to your wife. Do anger management. You've got to realize once and for all, you are no longer just Donald Trump. You're no longer just speaking for Trump Tower and Trump brand and Trump hotels and Trump steaks. You are speaking for an entire country. And our people do not deserve to be embarrassed and be represented by somebody who is so unfit for the job. So you've got to start pivoting. You've got to start acting presidential. You should have started 6 months ago, but start now if you couldn't do it.
I'm here today to talk about a disturbing question, which has an equally disturbing answer. My topic is the secrets of domestic violence. And the question I'm going to tackle is the one question everyone always asks. Why does she stay? Why would anyone stay with a man who beats her? I'm not a psychiatrist, a social worker, or an expert in domestic violence. I'm just one woman with a story to tell. I was 22. I had just graduated from Harvard College. I'd moved to New York City for my first job as a writer and editor at 17 Magazine. I had my first apartment, my first little green American Express card, and I had a very big secret. My secret was that I had this gun loaded with hollow point bullets pointed at my head by the man who I thought was my soulmate many, many times. The man who I loved more than anybody on earth held a gun to my head and threatened to kill me more times than I can even remember. I'm here to tell you the story of crazy love, a psychological trap disguised as love, one that millions of women and even a few men fall into every year. It may even be your story. I don't look like a typical domestic violence survivor. I have a BA in English from Harvard College, an MBA in marketing from Wharton Business School. I spent most of my career working for Fortune 500 companies, including Johnson & Johnson, Leo Burnett, and The Washington Post. I've been married for almost 20 years to my second husband, and we have three kids together. My dog is a black lab, and I drive a Honda Odyssey minivan. So my first message for you is that domestic violence happens to everyone. All races, all religions, all income and education levels. It's everywhere. And my second message is that everyone thinks domestic violence happens to women, that it's a women's issue. Not exactly. Over 85% of abusers are men. And domestic abuse happens only in intimate, interdependent, long-term relationships. In other words, in families. The last place we would want or expect to find violence, which is one reason domestic abuse is so confusing. I would have told you myself that I was the last person on earth who would stay with a man who beats me. But in fact, I was a very typical victim because of my age. I was 22. And in the United States, women ages 16 to 24 are three times as likely to be domestic violence victims as women of other ages. And over 500 women and girls this age are killed every year by abusive partners, boyfriends, and husbands in the United States. I was also a very typical victim because I knew nothing about domestic violence, its warning signs or its patterns. I met Connor on a cold, rainy January night. He sat next to me on the New York City subway, and he started chatting me up. He told me two things. One was that he, too, had just graduated from an Ivy League school, and that he worked at a very impressive Wall Street bank. But what made the biggest impression on me that first meeting was that he was smart and funny, and he looked like a farm boy. He had these big cheeks, these big apple cheeks, and this wheat blonde hair, and he seemed so sweet. One of the smartest things Connor did from the very beginning was to create the illusion that I was the dominant partner in the relationship. He did this, especially at the beginning, by idolizing me. We started dating, and he loved everything about me, that I was smart, that I'd gone to Harvard, that I was passionate about helping teenage girls and my job. He wanted to know everything about my family and my childhood, my hopes and dreams. Connor believed in me as a writer and a woman in a way that no one else ever had. And he also created a magical atmosphere of trust between us by confessing his secret, which was that as a very young boy starting at age 4, he had been savagely and repeatedly physically abused by his stepfather. And the abuse had gotten so bad that he had had to drop out of school in 8th grade, even though he was very smart. And he'd spent almost 20 years rebuilding his life, which is why that Ivy League degree and the Wall Street job and his bright, shiny future meant so much to him. If you had told me that this smart, funny, sensitive man who adored me would one day dictate whether or not I wore makeup, how short my skirts were, where I lived, what jobs I took, who my friends were, and where I spent Christmas, I would have laughed at you. Because there was not a hint of violence or control or anger in Connor at the beginning. I didn't know that the first stage in any domestic violence relationship is to seduce and charm the victim. I also didn't know that the second step is to isolate the victim. Now, Connor did not come home one day and announce, you know, hey, all this Romeo and Juliet stuff has been great, but I need to move into the next phase where I isolate you and I abuse you. So I need to get you out of this apartment where the neighbors can hear you scream and out of this city where you have friends and family and coworkers who can see the bruises. Instead, Connor came home one Friday evening and he told me that he had quit his job that day, his dream job. And he said that he had quit his job because of me, because I had made him feel so safe and loved that he didn't need to prove himself on Wall Street anymore. And he just wanted to get out of the city and away from his abusive, dysfunctional family and move to a tiny town in New England where he could start his life over with me by his side. Now, the last thing I wanted to do was leave New York and my dream job. But I thought you may...
All right. That was a segment on domestic violence, and we're going to get right back to that because it's always interesting, and I always play it because I think that it's spot on. Okay. All righty. Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Thanks for calling. Thanks for hanging in there.
Thanks. You are.
All right. You're on the air this time.
Okay, great. How you doing, Mr.
Okay.
Wilder?
I'm doing okay. How you doing, Sherlanda Evans McCain?
Great,
beautiful. We have some great weather here. It's just awesome. I just can't get over it. It's just so awesome. Okay, give us a little bit of your bio. Tell us a little bit something about yourself.
Well, I am a social worker, and I'm also a certified life coach. And I have a life coaching company called Piecing Life Together. And what we do is we work with people where our mission is to utilize alternative therapy, in assisting people to shift from a fixed mindset to a growth mindset in their personal and professional lives. And I am also the author of Mindset Change 101. And it's a book full okay. of life skills for personal and professional growth. So.
All right. You say you're an author of a book called Mindset 101?
Mindset Change.
A mindset change. Okay, so obviously that has something to do with how you think, how a person think to the way they are going to behave or what they're going to get out of life. It's a mindset. It's the way you carry yourself. It's how you think or something to that effect.
Oh, yes, because, you know, the quality of life increases when your mindset changes. So when you have a mindset that's stuck, you stay stuck. But when you have a mindset of growth, you know, you always try to continue to grow each and every day. So what I like about, you know, with the book I'm talking about, which is Mindset Change 101, it's a book full of life skills such as leadership, personal development, learning to learn, community building, and entrepreneurship.
Yeah. Well, what are you doing? I think it's fantastic because I think there's a lot of people out there need a shift in the way they think, because some people, you know, and I think this is a great book, Mindset Change. Is it your first book? Or?
It is.
Mm-hmm.
It's my first book. Are you, yes.
Okay. Are you planning on writing another?
Oh, yes. I mean, you know, once you get that taste of enlarge someone's territory and knowledge, you definitely want to continue on. I just thank God for allowing me to birth this first one. But yes, I do feel another baby coming, you know, really soon.
Yeah.
So I'm just.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When you wrote this book, did you use any of your life experiences to write this book?
Well, actually, this book is a how-to.
It's nonfiction.
It's basically, you know, explaining the different skills, because when I was growing up, no one came into my community to tell me about certain skill sets. So I didn't have those skills. I had to learn the hard way or, you know, the wrong way. So as I started, you know, working with people, I noticed that a couple of skill sets was missing. It was never taught or either they needed to sharpen them. So this book is, of course, my experiences in life of what, you know, I had to learn throughout, you know, the different skill sets that I talk about.
Okay.
So I just wanted to be able to make a way. Okay, I'm sorry.
No, I was listening to you. You wanted to be able to make a way.
Yeah, for many more people to, you know, be able to come, I mean, go through life without having to figure out so much. You know, you have different books out there that does talk about leadership, entrepreneurship, but I call it 101 because it's a foundation of these skills. You know, it's not for you
it's
to
a
not
starting
you know,
point.
Grab. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. It's a starting point. But this is great. So when did you find out that you wanted to help people? You say you're a social worker, too. I've worked in an environment of social workers. You know, I was sort of a part-time social worker years ago, and it's a challenging job. It's something challenging to get into because you're dealing with all kinds of people who may be having all kinds of problems, and you have to be able to understand and kind of meet their needs.
Yes. I still do, but I just got it on the back shelf for now. But I started off in a nonprofit organization that I developed. And I always had a desire to help people. And I started off working with youth. And as time was going on, I didn't have that reinforcement. So I started working with adults, trying to help balance that. As I'm teaching the youth, you know, the adults will be having an understanding as well. So I've always had the passion to help kids. I mean, you know, youth as well as adults, really all my life, you know, since I can remember. Yeah. So I think one thing about life is your purpose is already there. It's just as you grow older, it becomes, you know, bigger. So.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think a lot of the things I've never really personally was involved in, but I learned a lot of things up and maturing as a man, and I learn a lot of things, and I take some of those things and I go out and I try to help people who have probably experienced some of those things, but they're experiencing negative results from whatever they're doing, and you try to help them and everything. And, you know, so do you have your book with you?
I do.
Can you read us an excerpt, a little bit of it?
I can.
That's up to you.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, like I said, going into chapter one, it's life skills. The pursuit of becoming the best you that you can be means letting go of excuses. And navigating to chapter two, learning to learn, no matter your age, you are never too old to learn. The human brain is like a computer with the capacity to expand and change each time you learn something new. And just jumping into entrepreneurship skills, a wide range of skills are needed to succeed in today's highly competitive market. The skills outlined in this section will help you to assess your skills and provide a baseline from which to improve. And like I said, the book is laid out, and in every chapter you'll have a time of a reflection. And then in the end of the book, you have a 21 days.
Yeah. Okay, like you said before, you mentioned this earlier. There are a lot of books out there similar to yours. What make your books stand out? How would you make your book stand out from all of those books out there that are similar? You mentioned something about calling it 101, but what makes your book stand out from all the other books that are similar out on Amazon or wherever?
What makes my book that stands out is because you won't really find a book that has so many skill sets in one, and showing the interrelationships with them, you know, between them. This book, like I stated, I've worked with individuals, and I've always had to get a book on leadership, a book on entrepreneurship. So at that time, I asked, you know, was asking the question, why isn't it one book out there that has, you know, a foundation to start from? So, and that's why I developed the five skill set in one book, you know, and showing the interrelationship.
How long has it been out? How long has it been published?
It's a new published book. It was published in April.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. So how's it doing?
It's doing good. Know, of course, you're going. Yeah, I'm you know, just getting it out and, you know, working with, you know, a great marketing team. So you'll be seeing more of it very soon.
A number one New York bestseller, right? It sounds like it's a great book. I always admire these books because a lot of people who do read, they go after nonfiction. They devour nonfiction books because they want to learn something. They want to be able to better their lives by reading something. Because I know there's a lot of the books that I sell on Amazon, most of the books that I do sell are my nonfiction ones, more so than the fiction, because people are looking to learn something to better their lives. And nonfiction is it, you know. So I guess my question is, are you going to be doing another nonfiction? Or?
Oh, yes, I will. Yes, definitely.
You ever thought about doing fiction?
No, not at this time.
No.
I just like to stay in the how-to, you know.
Yeah. So. I do more fiction. I have more fiction published than I do nonfiction. I just love fiction. I mean, you can just make story. Just because a book is fiction doesn't mean that you can't add some true elements, some nonfiction elements in that fictional book. So a lot of people get that confused. Just because this fiction doesn't mean that you can't add something in there that might be nonfiction where people can actually get something from. And that's what I try to do with my my fiction books, not just to make up a story or this or that, but try to add something in there that's going to compel people to turn the next page, you know.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Okay,
author Sherlanda Evans McCain on the George Wilder Jr. Show, and she's been talking about her book, Mindset Change. Sherlanda, where can we find the book? I mean, if we were looking for the book, we wanted to buy it or download it and check it out and check you out, how would we do that?
You can go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble. Mm-hmm. And you can also go to my website, peaceandlifetogether.com.
Peacing Life. Wow, that's great. Peaceandlifetogether.com. Is that?
Yes, sir. It is.
All right. Okay. Yolanda, I wish you a lot of luck with this. And it seems like you're going to be very successful. You're an entrepreneur. You're a writer. You're a life coach. You're a social worker. That's a lot of titles.
Well, when you're helping a lot of different people, you got to have a lot of titles, you know, and you have to be
yeah.
equipped. So I
yeah,
just
a lot,
thank God that I'm being equipped.
Yeah, because you meet a lot of different people and you got to be, you know, you got to know what's on this person's mind and try to help that person. People are different. All right, Sherlanda Evans, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
No problem. Bye-bye. Take care.
Bye-bye. Have a good one.
You too. Sherlanda Evans on the George Wilder Jr. Show talking about her book, Mindset Change. And you are listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio.
When I first saw the tweet this morning, I was frankly disgusted. I thought to myself, this dude has got such a fixation with women and blood. What is wrong with him? And then you remember that this dude, this disgusting dude, is the president of the United States. And you realize just how much he is diminishing the presidency of the United States. You realize that what he is doing is not just acting for Donald Trump. He's acting for all of us. He's acting for our president. And he is embarrassing. He is shameful. He is disgusting. And I'll say this about Republicans. I'm really tired of hearing words like disappointed, like disturbed, like I'm bothered, like I wish he wouldn't do it. It's time that somebody looks at the camera and looks at him and calls him up and says, listen, you crazy.
Hey there, friends and fans. This is George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show. I want you to enjoy my fictional writings located on Amazon and elsewhere. The website is www.amazon.com/author/GWilder or go to the Amazon website and type my name in the text bar above to either order or download a book, a story, essays, novels, novelettes, whatever you want to do. And I want to thank you very much for that. And as always, good reading. This is George Wilder Jr. And keep listening. There's always more to come. All right. Thank you, everybody.
It's time for Donald Trump to resign as president. Admittedly, it's been an interesting couple of days, but for any patriotic American capable of adding 2 and 2 and not getting 1.5 million, this is enough. If you voted for Trump or you support him now or you're saying give him a chance, again, I'm not going to yell at you or call you names. I'm not going to try to argue.
Johansson is speaking right now here in Washington. I want to listen then.
And when the time came for STD and cancer screenings, no judgment, no questions asked, Planned Parenthood provided a safe place where I could be treated with gentle guidance. Now, I may have been 15 and surprisingly self-sufficient, but I'm sure there isn't one person here who has not been helped by Planned Parenthood directly or otherwise. When I knew I was coming to speak on behalf of women's reproductive and health issues, every single one of my girlfriends had a story about Planned Parenthood. They saved me so many times. One of my best girlfriends confided in me, saying, they saved my ass and some other parts too. When I found out I had precancerous signs I never would have known about without my annual checkups, and her speech grew more emphatic and emotional as she described how the organization had helped her decide between treatment options. She was able to make some difficult decisions, deciding what was right for her body, and her then partner, without anyone else's interference. My sister also used Planned Parenthood services for years after moving states. She'd been living her whole life in New York City, pursuing her dream to move to California. She had no contacts and no health insurance, but was able to regularly see a doctor at a Planned Parenthood clinic for screenings, advice, birth control, and checkups. For the more than 2.5 million patients a year that rely on Planned Parenthood services for cancer and STD screenings, birth control, safe abortion, and pregnancy planning, these are uncertain and anxious times. Lawmakers in 24 states have tried to block patients from receiving care at Planned Parenthood. Congress has voted to limit access to reproductive services 9 times. Boo! Yes, boo! There are very real and devastating consequences to limiting access to what should be considered basic health care. For millions of Americans, Planned Parenthood is often the only trustworthy and affordable clinic providing safe education, sex education, safe abortion, and life-saving services. President Trump, I did not vote for you. That said, I respect that you are our president-elect, and I want to be able to support you. But first, I ask that you support me. Support my sister. Support my mother. Support my best friend and all of our girlfriends. Support the men and women here today that are anxiously awaiting to see how your next moves may drastically affect their lives. Support my daughter, who may actually, as a result of the appointments you have made, grow up in a country that is moving backwards, not forwards, and who may potentially not have the right to make choices for her body and her future that your daughter Ivanka has been privileged to have. I ask you to support all women and our fight for equality in all things, including the fight to be recognized as individuals who know better for ourselves what is right for our bodies, better than any elected official, popular or otherwise. It is a great honor for me to be speaking here in front of all of you today. After the result of this November's election, I felt as a woman, as an American citizen, a great weight bearing down on my shoulders, the feeling that the near future would present many obstacles, confrontation, and division. My immediate thought after hearing the election results was, oh man, we have so much work to do. But once the heaviness began to subside, I realized that an opportunity has presented itself to make real long-term change, not just for future Americans, but in the way that we view our responsibilities to get involved with and stay active in our communities. Let this weight not drag you down, but help to get your heels stuck in. I pledge my relentless devotion to support women's health care initiatives. I will not stop fighting to make basic women's health care available to all. I believe with every fiber of my being that the conversations that we have with our partners and our doctors about what we do with our bodies and our future should not be made fodder for any politician, political agenda, lawmaker, and for-profit corporation. We must stand up for what are our basic human rights and always move forward, never backwards. The current political administration benefits from taking the power away from us. Don't give up your power. Don't let the feelings of helplessness make you complacent. I urge you all to make a difference on the ground. Volunteer. Volunteer with organizations that help women seeking a safe place to make some of the most difficult decisions of their lives. Donate to causes.
All righty. I think that's it for that. If it's not, then it will be. I want to thank my guest once again, Sherlonda Evans McCain. And I hope you guys didn't check my hot mic moment there. But if you did, hopefully you will understand that George Wilder Jr. His show is now on the air. Hate has no home here. When you are honest and forthright in all things, you never have to worry about covering your tracks or being exposed. In other words, always try to be honest and forthright on the George Wilder Jr. Show. It's all about making the world a better place, one show at a time, one show at a time. All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio out of the city of Chicago, the state of Illinois. Folks, we are in some trying times. We are in some dark times. We must fight for an America without hate. We must fight for an America without bigotry. We must fight for an America without racism. We must fight for our rights. We must fight to continue to be Americans. Some of those rights are being threatened, taken away. But we have to get out here and fight the good fight. You know, and it has to be done, folks. It has to be in a non-violent way. We know how to do things non-violently. So let's go out and make our voices heard, fighting non-violently.
Into one conspiracy theory of what he calls a silent.
I'm Keith Olbermann, and this is The Resistance. We have elected an idiot. For all the insanity and the stunning self-absorption and the bullying and the delusional view of America that would embarrass a high school dropout watching cartoons while strung out on meth, the much more existential threat from the Swiss cheese personality of Donald John Trump roared to the forefront over this weekend past. And that existential threat is simply this. In the complex international relations that, like it or not, keep the world from blowing itself up every afternoon, Trump has just proved he has no earthly clue what the fuck he is doing. Just since last Friday, Donald Trump has given aid and comfort to our Russian enemies who are aiming for nothing short of world prominence with the help of their jackass Trump. He has undermined this nation's status as the only enforcer left on the side of human rights. And he has screwed up, whether inadvertently or as reported Sunday night deliberately, nearly four decades of diplomacy balanced on a razor's edge with China and Taiwan. And just as that... I'm Keith Olbermann, and this is The Resistance. The White House continues to deny that the Attorney General's demand for the resignations of all 46 incumbent U.S. attorneys around the country and the subsequent optical disaster of the firing of New York's U.S. Attorney, Preet Bharara, was instigated.
Mr. President.
Senator from California.
Senator Carper, it's interesting. You talked about Tanzania. It reminds me of a greeting that I've often heard from people who live in various African countries. You've probably heard it. But when you meet someone for the first time, instead of what we would normally say, pleased to meet you, the greeting back is, I see you. I see you. And I think that really is part of our concern here. Do we see the people who will be impacted in the way that they are actually living their lives? And do we understand, if we see them, that this bill will not be in their best interest? And right now, for example, we know 13 senators, all Republicans, are crafting a bill, and this bill would restructure our nation's entire health care system, which when you add up what Americans can spend on hospitals, doctors, prescription drugs, and all the rest, we understand that it makes up one-sixth of our economy. It would affect the lives of everyone, our parents, grandparents, those who are in need of caregiving, our children struggling with asthma or opioid abuse, our spouses who may be battling cancer. And what is equally distressing is that this bill is being written in secret. The chairman of the Finance Committee says he has not seen the bill. The Secretary of Health and Human Services says he has not seen the bill. The American people, the people we all represent, have certainly not seen the bill. Well, I think the American people deserve better. This bill is being written entirely along partisan lines without any attempt to bring Democrats on board. And the American people deserve better. This bill is being written and rushed through the Senate with hardly any time to debate the cost or the details of this proposal. And the American people deserve better. Now, I remember when our colleagues across the aisle said the Affordable Care Act was being rammed down the American people's throats in the middle of the night. Well, the ACA went, in fact, through 106 public hearings. It incorporated more than 170 Republican amendments. The whole process took an entire year. But this health care plan involves no hearings, no bill text, and no transparency at all. As United States senators, we were sent here to represent the American people. Represent the American people. We answer to the American people. So why are my colleagues from across the aisle trying to put one over on the American people? I've met folks all across California and this country, and they see what's happening. They know that if this bill were as wonderful as its proponents would like us to believe, it would be out in the open. The American people deserve greater transparency. But even though the authors of this proposal have tried to conceal the details of their plan, we know enough to know this bill would be nothing short of a disaster. We know because we've been told that it's about 80% the same as the bill that was passed by the House. A bill so catastrophic that even the President of the United States, who hailed its passage, now calls it, quote, mean. We know that it would throw 23 million Americans off their health insurance within a decade, including putting 4 to 5 million Californians at risk of losing coverage. We know it would raise costs for middle-class families and seniors. In every county of California, average monthly premium costs would go up, while financial support to pay premiums would fall. We know it would put Americans with pre-existing conditions at risk and leave people who need maternity care or opioid treatment without coverage, or force them to pay huge out-of-pocket costs. Yes. We know it would cut about $834 billion from Medicaid, which means less money for families to pay for nursing homes, to support children with special needs, or to treat substance abuse. Bless you.
Thank you.
And that is another reason we need the Affordable Care Act to be in place in a way that we fix what's wrong, but we mend what's broken and not repeal it altogether. I recently visited, Mr. President, a really remarkable treatment clinic in Los Angeles. It's called the Martin Luther King Jr. Outpatient Center. Everyone from the doctors to the patients can tell you that when 46,000 Californians, 4,600 Californians are dying every year from substance abuse and opioid overdoses, it is wrong and irrational to cut Medicaid. So it really makes you wonder, why would anyone support this bill? How does this bill help real people with real challenges? At a healthcare rally in Los Angeles back in January, I met a woman named Tanya. Before the ACA, She'd sign up for insurance just long enough to see a doctor. She'd then have a few tests done and fill a prescription. Then she would realize she couldn't pay and couldn't afford to pay for the insurance beyond that. And she said it's, quote, the worst feeling in the world to have to tell your doctor, who is trying to make you well, that you cannot afford the treatment prescribed. Tanya told me, quote, before the Affordable Care Act, living without health coverage was a nightmare in this country. But she went on to say that has all changed. And thanks to the ACA, I can now see a doctor when I need to, monitor my condition, and stay healthy so I can keep working and contribute to our nation's economy. If my colleagues in Congress, and she referred to them as if the Republicans in Congress repeal the law, I don't know what I will do. So I ask, how does the Republican health care plan help Tanya? Another woman, Krista, told me, quote, I am married with four children, none of whom, and one of whom is a 10-year-old type 1 diabetic. He requires daily active insulin management to stay alive, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. She went on to say health care is not optional for us. Even with health insurance, diabetes management is the type of thing that can bankrupt you. Without health insurance, I can't imagine what I would do. She went on to say the ACA is a huge relief for my family. So I ask, how does this bill help Krista and her family? Then there's Rhett in Marin County. More than 7 years ago, he was diagnosed with leukemia. Rhett is 9 years old. He says, cancer cells are the bad guys. This is what he wrote me. For 3.5 years, I took chemo to get the bad guys out. I had more than 1,000 doses of chemotherapy. My parents had to tell my sister that I might die of cancer. And then he went on to write, thanks to my doctors and nurses, my family and friends, my church and my community, and the Affordable Care Act, now I'm, and then he writes, gone with the cancer. I have a pre-existing condition. Thanks to the Affordable Care Act, my parents don't have to worry about losing coverage. A 9-year-old Rhett is showing us the way. But how does this bill help Rhett? Now, I don't know the party affiliation of any of these folks. I don't know if they're Democrats. I don't know if they're Republicans. I don't know if they're independents. I don't know if they're members of the Green Party. I'm not asking them those questions. I'm asking them, how are you doing? What's helping you? What do you need? And how will this impact you? And I know that I'm just one of two senators that they have. And when it comes to their needs and their need to be represented in the United States Congress and their need to be heard and their need to be seen, party affiliation should not matter. What should matter are the needs of the American people. And regardless then of who they vote for in a partisan election, I am certain of this. This health care plan that is being proposed by my colleagues from across the aisle will not solve their problems. And it will only create, in fact, more problems and potentially devastate people's lives. So to my colleagues, I say, this shouldn't be a matter of supporting this bill automatically if you're a Republican or objecting just because you're a Democrat. This is about what's right and what's wrong. If you know this bill is bad, stand up and stop it. Speak that truth. Now is not the time to keep quiet and hope nobody notices. Forget the politics. Forget partisan pressure and talk radio and primary ads. Instead, just listen to the voices of the American people. Not just in California, but in Nevada, in Arizona, in Ohio, in Alaska, in Maine, in Pennsylvania, in West Virginia. Because they have made themselves overwhelmingly clear. Only 20% of Americans support this bill. A majority opposes it in every state in this country. It is the least popular piece of legislation in modern history. I'm asking you to think about the American people. I'm asking you to think about Tanya. Think about Krista. Think about Rhett, living with leukemia since he was just 2.5 years old, undergoing 2.5 hour infusions every night with such incredible bravery. Let the determination of Americans like Rhett bring us together, a 9-year-old boy who tells us, in his words, don't repeal the Affordable Care Act, improve it. Because we all agree, the ACA can be improved. It must be improved. It isn't perfect. And I am ready to work with anyone who really wants to make it better. Instead of playing politics with public health and people's lives, we can actually work together to strengthen our healthcare system.
All right, folks, you are actually listening to Carmela Harris, and they're talking about her being a candidate for president in 2020. Yeah, I talked about this the other day on the show. Yeah, she seemed receptive. She's African American, and anything is better than what we have already. Okay. And she's very bright. She's very intelligent. She's college degree, PhDs, whatever. And she is mulling it around. And I hope she comes around. And because Trump said he wants to run again, he should run straight to the mental hospital. That's what he ought to be running, where he should be running. Anyway, I wanted to talk about this senseless shooting. You might have heard about this, folks. It's Justine Diamond. She called 911 to report a hearing, possible sex assault in back of her alley before a police officer shot and killed her. And this was like days ago, if not a week ago, and we still have no reason why this cop shot her. There's no reason. The police department in that county did not give us a reason to why this guy shot this young woman who called the police herself for help. That's something. I've heard this before, where someone would call 911, and the police show up and they shoot the person who called 911. They kill the person who called them for help, which is ridiculous. And that's what happened here. Justine Diamond called 911 to report a possible sexual assault in the back of her home, and she was shot. And the video shows that the police officer is pulling up in an SUV, a black SUV. It looks like an alley or something. They were going down, pulling up, and she came out more likely to greet them, to let them, you know, to tell them about, and she was shot. And the thing about it, the officer who shot her was sitting on the passenger side of the seat. There were two officers in the car. He shot her. He reached across his partner and shot the lady. You know, so the gun went off in his partner's face as he shot this woman. And my understanding is that he just shot her. You know, she was approaching the vehicle and he shot her, and she's the one who called them for help. And still, there's been no real explanation, if any explanation at all, to why this happened. And we're all waiting to see what's going to happen to this cop. And this police officer, he looks as if he's a Muslim. The guy who shot her looks like It appears he has a Muslim name. They say he's from Somali. Okay, that's, I would assume, is Muslim. So they're trying, they're not saying anything that him being a Muslim is, if that's the reason why he shot this woman, because he is a terrorist on the police force. You know, so I don't know. We're still waiting to hear from the police force to why the police took out his gun, reached over his partner, and shot this woman point blank range. And people are now all over the world are celebrating this lady's life. She was a miracle. People are saying, I don't know, it says something here. She had a great smile, will light up a room. Okay. It's easy when somebody dies to put them on a pedestal, you know, but she deserved this pedestal. You hear it, you're all the good things. You don't think about negative things, you know. With Justin, a pedestal isn't necessary because she lived a life of meaning and purpose. Yeah. And her purpose was to see the good in everyone. That's what you call making the world a better place. And she was taken, this wonderful angel was taken away from us because some overzealous cop pulled out his gun and wanted to shoot somebody. It's just awful. I mean, police brutality is just raining all over the place. Now he's not locked up, the cop. He's not locked up. He's not in jail. He's on what they call desk duty or something until the investigation is over. And we haven't heard anything so far to why he did this. What was his motive to shoot this young lady? Okay, Justin Diamond leaves behind a legacy of love. Her purpose was to see the good in people, the good in people. And she was out there helping people. I mean, I think she was a yoga instructor or something. She held yoga classes or some sort of life coaching class for people. And there were so many people looked up to her, came to her for guidance. And this cop just came out of the blue and just shot her, killed her. And he's still walking, you know, until the investigation is over. I mean, this should be a open and shut case. The guy should get life in prison. You know, I don't know if he shot her because he was a Muslim or he just reacted. I don't know. I'm pretty sure he's going to get one of those lawyers who are going to try to get him off and say he's innocent, you know. So, I mean, lawyers, they represent people who are guilty all the time. And they come up with some really, really awful reasons for defending these killers. And I'm pretty sure that this Somali officer is going to have, he's probably got two or three lawyers already who are setting up his defense. What kind of defense? You shot this, you just pull your gun and you shot her. There is no defense. That's murder. That's capital murder. But the police officers, and some of his lawyers are going to defend this guy and said maybe she was attacking him. She ran up on him. He was defending his life. His life was being threatened of some malarkey like that. And if you watch the video, she was not doing that. She just walked up to the van. She called him. She dialed 911. She called them for help because she thought something was going on in the back of her house, in the alley. So when the police showed up, she walked up to the van, to the SUV, and she was shot and killed. And this guy, this police officer, is still free. He's not locked up. He's on desk duty or something, administrative leave, whatever they call it. It doesn't make sense. You know, it doesn't make sense. So we are watching like everybody else. What is going to happen with this guy who shot her?
You know, I'm pretty sure something's going to come out soon in the media saying this guy's going to jail for murder, straight up murder, because that's all it was, murder. There's no other way for people to try and paint this. This guy came out. I can't say it enough that he came out and just shot this beautiful, talented, loving, and caring person. And this asshole is still walking the streets. He should not be, but he's still out there. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Thanks for tuning in, folks. We're going to do Kelly Conway, and we will be right back.
During an interview with Politico that was posted online this week, White House advisor, White House aide, whatever you want to call her, White House spokesperson maybe, Kellyanne Conway, took a shot at her critics once again. She told Politico that her critics were, quote, unhappy people with poison keyboards. I guess what she's trying to say is that they're a bunch of internet trolls going out there just saying mean old things to Kellyanne, who really isn't doing anything wrong. She doesn't understand why people are being so mean and horrible to her these days. Now, according to this interview that she gave with Politico, she had explained to her children that, yeah, look, mommy's going to be doing this thing. People are going to come at her. It's going to be, you know, pretty ugly sometimes, but just deal with it. To be honest, that is a very good thing to tell your children. Yeah, when you're in the public spotlight, there's going to be the naysayers. But if she took the time to explain that to her children, maybe she should have taken the time to explain to her children that, hey, listen, mommy's going to have to go on TV and lie through her teeth to the American public about things that never happened. She is the one who came up with the term alternative facts. She is the one who invented the Bowling Green massacre that never happened. So I understand nobody likes to get criticized, but Kellyanne, you're inviting this on yourself. The people who criticize you, who call you out, are not unhappy people. I can tell you firsthand, I'm a very happy person. I love my life right now. But I will continue to criticize you anytime you feel the need to go on television and lie to the American public on behalf of Donald Trump. Anytime you make up a fake terrorist attack, we're going to be there, as will everybody else online. And it's not because we just dislike you. It's because we don't want you to continue to dumb down the United States. This is our civic duty, to hold you and everyone else in your White House accountable. So you may think it's fine to go out there and give these interviews and attack the people who you claim are attacking you. But the truth is, all we're doing is trying to hold you accountable and, to be honest, try to undo some of the damage that you're inflicting on the public today. There are Republicans out there in the United States today who, honest to God, believe that the Bowling Green Massacre was a thing, that it happened, that it was carried out by Iraqi immigrants, and that U.S. citizens died as a result of it. And that's all on you, Kellyanne. You're poisoning the public discourse. It's not the people who dislike you. They don't have the problems. You do. And you need to learn, and you need to take the time to teach your children that when you screw up, you do get held accountable. When you lie to hundreds of millions of people, they're going to come after you. And the only way you can make it right is to go out and apologize and try to do the right thing from that point forward.
The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. It is all about making the world a better place. Join me.
I guess the world knows by now that O.J. Simpson is free.
The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on
all right,
the
shut
air.
Up.
It is Be all quiet. About making the world a better place. Join me.
Not again. All right. O.J. Simpson is free. The guy who murdered Nicole Brown Simpson and Ronald Goldman is going free. Yeah, I think he did it. I actually think he did it. But the glove didn't fit. So obviously, if the glove didn't fit and he has a big hand, then maybe, you know, there is some circumstantial evidence there. I'm not a lawyer, so, you know. But anyway, O.J. Simpson is free. I think he's going to go free sometime in the fall, and that's not too far away. Okay, after parole, the 70-year-old Simpson will probably have retirement income from acting and football. So he's going to be doing pretty well. And plus, you know, not only income from acting and football, he's going to be probably invited on a lot of talk shows. He's going to go around the talk show circuit. He's going to get paid for that. So O.J. Simpson, he may be dirt poor, dirt broke right now, but once he's released and he starts signing all these endorsements and people going to want to talk to him all over the place, he may even get back into the movies, you know, because he's only 70 years old. So, you know, that's not that bad. Except being 70 is not that bad when you're just getting out of prison. So he's going to have retirement income from both acting and football. So this guy's going to be doing pretty well, pretty well. He won't be homeless. Let's say he will not end up homeless. Okay, what's next for O.J. Simpson after prison? Why America needs more O.J. Simpson moments. I don't know. I don't need an O.J. Simpson moment. I don't know what they're talking about. But anyway, he's free. He's out. He won parole. A lot of people are upset. A lot of people don't give a damn. A lot of people are saying that spending 9 years in prison, that means he actually paid for killing those two folks, those two people. In other words, some people are saying, well, O.J. has done his time. He's done his time in jail. And some people equate that with murdering those two folks, even though this is something separate. This is not O.J. Simpson spending 9 years in jail for murder. This is O.J. spending 9 years in jail for being a thief. O.J., I remember O.J. was saying that he was coming to take back items that were stolen from him, something to that effect. And however, the judge probably didn't believe it and gave him 9 years in jail, in prison. But this is not for the murder of his ex-wife, Nicole Simpson, or her friend, Ron Goldman. This is a separate matter. But still in all, people are saying that O.J. served his time if he, in fact, committed that murder. He served his time. I don't buy that. I really don't buy that, but that's what they're saying. You know, but the fact is that this man is out of jail. And by this man being out of jail, things are going to get a little bit more exciting around here because he's going to be telling his side of the story. He's going to get paid for it. He's going to write a book. He's going to have income from that. He's going to have lawyers all around him, you know, so he may not have a penny to his name right now. But once he's totally released, the bucks are going to start coming in to O.J. Simpson. But I would caution O.J. Simpson to be cautious because, you know, some people still think that he killed these people and they may be out to get him. So he should be a little cautious and a little bit, in other words, he should watch his back. All right.
Ladies and gentlemen, the George Wilder Jr. Show has now arrived.
haven't helped the girl who walks the streets alone. Heaven help the roses if the bombs begin to fall. Anyone ever saw? Heaven help the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns back away. Heaven help the man who kicks the man who has a crawl. Heaven help us all.
Great weekend. Bye.